Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwashed, and it is now time for us to move on to the climate crazy section. Though most of it is climate crazy, I find it hard to divide when are we not actually talking about the climate crazy, Don? But it's good to still, yeah, focus on a few key headlines that catch our attention over the week.
Yeah, there's plenty. There's no shortage. It's hard to sift through them, Jaspreet, and find the key ones. I'm sure there's thousands more.
We could call the whole show Climate Crazy and get on with this, but no, we must put some order to our work. And this one from the ABC News caught my attention. It says, calls for indoor air quality mandate and $10 billion for school ventilation. Goes on to say, a group of scientists, architects, and other experts are calling for government action to mandate indoor quality standards and improve the terrible, quotes, ventilation in Australian schools that can hamper learning. So their problem is that this recent study of 60 New South Wales schools found that if windows were shut, CO2 levels easily exceeded 2,500 parts per million, which is really bad.
Really bad. You know, just open the windows, open the doors, do outside classrooms. I mean, what's wrong with these people? We've given them everything they wanted, and all of a sudden, this isn't good. In fact, at 3,000 or 2,500 ppm CO2, isn't there global boiling happening at that point? I can't believe they're not all little red little frogs. I mean, this is nonsense. It happens in every enclosed building with people in it. In Baku, where they're having the Conference of the Parties number 29 in Azerbaijan, there will be plenaries happening with plenty of CO2 in the rooms. Oh, although they'll have modern air conditioning to suck it out, perhaps. But I mean, there's nothing unique about this. I think we talked in New Zealand about having to put bigger gaps under the doors so there was bigger air movement into the rooms.
Don, I mean, you're missing the vital part of the headline.
I'm sure
it
I am.
Said indoor air quality mandate and $10 billion for school ventilation. The $10 billion being what you should be focusing on. The rest of it is nonsense. If this was impacting kids' learning, and I know if I am in a closed room for a while, I need the doors open, I feel stuffy. They don't want to do that. And they want to say that poor quality educational outcomes are a result of that. I wonder what happens to those engineers and seamen who are in submarines for extended periods of times underwater, making very technical, cutting-edge decisions, I would say, far more than in a school classroom. And they live in accommodation in a submarine. Typically, anything from 5,000 to 8,000 parts per million is the CO2 level. They don't blame their poor outcomes on the CO2 levels, but somehow these kids are being pandered to. Nonsense, I'd say.
Nonsense, you say. Of course, without the ventilation, they could have super spreader events in there. And that's a problem.
Let's not go there. Super spreaders.
Well, wasn't it intriguing? We will go there, actually, Jaspreet. I'm going to overrule you. wasn't it intriguing that we needed to have people under the COVID regimes locked into little rooms with no ventilation. And then it took a few months before people realized that ventilation was absolutely key to help people through the worst of that, that bug they had. So, you know, lock yourself up. Crazy. I mean, my mother, you probably had it in your house. Open the doors, let the place breathe, let the cold air get in, and get outside, you kids. I remember it. I remember it well. Get outside and get some fresh air.
This is ridiculous. This is climate crazy. Ultimately, just an excuse for $10 billion here.
Yes.
And we'll see what happens. But if they start blaming kids' outcomes on this, quickly you'll see students grasping onto that for,
Yeah, of course, everyone's grasping onto an opportunity as well for making currency, as you're talking about. You know, the $10 billion, you talk about engineers. There's a whole lot of planners and consultants and you name it. There's a lot of people feeding at this trough.
Yep. So it's all about the money, not about the climate.
Yeah. So what else do we have there, Jaspreet? Because now we've ranted on about that one.
I want to go into the dams.
Oh,
I want to go into floods, because a few people might say you and I are very blasé about climate change, and perhaps we are not being sensitive to the massive loss of life that happened in Spain and Valencia in those, can I call it flash flooding event that happened a few days back?
Yeah, flash flooding, you might say. And of course, the alarmists would say it's unprecedented, never greater than ever recorded before. But of course, you and I have been following output from the likes of Roger Pielki Jr. and his cohort for a long time. And we know to be wary about headlines about that. And aside from, I think you're going to quote Lord Matt Ridley and his output in Spectator, but we've also had Dr. Matthew Wailiki on recently, and he writes really well about this. He talked on the Valencia floods, his headline was Drowning in Deception, and he's just put up another Substack called Rethinking River Restoration, where he talks about the Klamath River in Oregon and how its dams are being taken down to have the fish have better access. Now, I know you want to go back to Valencia, so let's talk about Valencia first. I can visualize the Turia River, but the Turia River in downtown, it flows through a different direction in Valencia than it used to. They moved it, and everyone thought, life's good, we'll never have problems again. So they realigned the river, but forgot to still realign their rest of their thinking to, as I read it, make themselves
I'll go to this organization before we head into the Turia. It's called damremoval.eu. This is a website, and those who do are on my Facebook friend list or follow my page, and it's open there. I don't have any privacy filters there. So I put up a post about a week ago. This website called damremoval.eu, they say they are a movement to restore free-flowing rivers for the benefit of people and nature. And they have on their website the massive amount of dams that they say are, you know, actually hampering nature. They're a man-made structure. So on their website, they have put the statistics, which they're very proud of, that in 2023 alone, they removed 487 dams in Europe. They are a group of river enthusiasts, volunteers, activists, practitioners, biologists, so on and so forth. And all they do is, we look at dams, we see the ones that are not needed, we work with local government, other change makers, I'd say NGOs, and they do this. And Spain has not been spared. So there have been dam removals happening in various parts of Europe. So now back to this one. The moment these floods happened, and even within the last century, 1957, was it, Don, when they had another massive flash flood in this very same area?
Yep.
But this one and that 1957 one are just two. This region of Spain, going back to the 11th century, they've had dozens of these floods in the same region, 75 at least, and counting. And following the 1957 floods in Spain in the same area, city planners, they took the bold step to divert this river that Don speaks of, the Turia, and to spare the city from further tragedies. But what did they do next? They permitted unchecked development right around this newly created flood channel, directly in harm's way. And decades of ignoring the obvious resulted in unpredictable failure, and no amount of whatever we can talk about the human influence on climate can change that fact. But we do not have anyone talking about all of this. They want to blame climate change for every single thing, and fossil fuels more specifically.
Yep. Well, it's not as I said, you and I have followed some very adept writers on the subject, and it's clear that taking down structures that in some cases were put up hundreds if not thousands of years ago have been a seriously flawed response. And in fact, I'm just looking at the data again. Really, it's well over 1,000 dams on European rivers that have been removed from 2020 to 2023. So it's
close to 500 in last year alone.
Yeah, alone.
And looking at the past few years, and I am reading out from an article on The Spectator that I've unpaywalled, it said that the Spanish government has been removing dams at a furious rate until a European Union program to encourage the restoration of rivers, and I believe it goes by the name of nature-based solutions. They want to restore rivers to a wild state for the benefit of fish migration. Spain set about dismantling barriers of all kind. In 2021, Spain got rid of 108 dams. 2022, another 133. And last year, 2023, I mean, its dam removals were only second only to France. And yeah, at the same time, while these smaller ones might not have, removal of these might not have affected the Valencia floods as much, there's also the failure to build a new dam. Because, hey, we suddenly don't care about the dams. Damn the dams.
Yep. Damn the Dams was a song in New Zealand years ago by John Hanlon, but that's a different story. It's intriguing, isn't it? They want the fish population to be able to migrate up the rivers. I thought in New Zealand we've had to do what's called fish ladders. And sorry, I stand to be corrected on this, but I think there's fish ladders to allow our migrating fish to go up through the dams that we've got. Whether they're on every dam, I don't know. And I know they come at great cost, these things. So surely there's a remedy. There's an engineering remedy for this, actually, Jaspreet. And it doesn't mean you have to take away the dams, I wouldn't have thought. But yeah,
I mean,
who am I to say?
At the same time, Don, a 2,000-year-old Roman dam, built by Augustus, saved the city of Aragon from floods at the same time when this was happening.
Mm.
Right?
Yep.
A 2,000-year-old engineering marvel saved Aragon, but yet we are not looking at the infrastructural issues here. And as this gets more and more widespread issues of this, please continue to keep an eye on damremoval.eu, the European Dam Removal Program, and see what the consequences are going to be of this long term.
Yeah, well, the old engineers, before modern technology came along, weren't stupid. They engineered things just fine. They built things beautifully when you look back. And of course, today we think we know better. And you hear the headlines, unprecedented rains. No, you read the articles by the likes of Dr. Matthew Wailiki, and they talked about unpredictability of rain in those areas. There's always been an unpredictability about them. Isolated high-level depressions that bring unpredictable torrential rains. Now, that's very similar to the... you don't get NIWA saying unpredictable, isolated torrential rain. These are just unprecedented rains, and they're rivers, atmospheric rivers, and all these sorts of terms. There seems to be some sort of self-justification going on here, doesn't there?
There is
the
a
climate alarmists.
There is a pattern here. Also in October, when the floods in North Carolina happened following the cyclone Helene, the area around the city of Asheville was completely destroyed, whereas downstream Nashville was much better off. And Stephen McIntyre, a Canadian climate analyst, he noticed one of the possible reasons. I'm not saying this is the only one, but in the 1930s in the U.S. in that area, after a series of relentless floods in Tennessee, this built a whole lot of dams throughout the catchment of the Tennessee River that helped with the unemployment following the Great Depression, electricity generation, and of course, prevention of flooding. 49 dams were built over 40 years, including a huge one over Nashville. And the devastating floods of the early 20th century were forgotten. One district in the U.S. rejected all the proposed dams at that point. No surprises. It was Asheville. A dozen dams were planned for this area, but they were never built. Had they been built, could the outcome have been different? Could some suffering have been saved? I don't know, but my answer would be veering towards, in all probability, yes.
Exactly. And you know, and I could be speaking perhaps a little inaccurately here. I remember the Brisbane floods, was it, of 10 years ago. There's quite considerable dam infrastructure around Brisbane, but I think they didn't prepare to release water from the dam to save the Brisbane River flooding when they knew there was going to be a large amount of rain in the headwaters of that catchment. And so it came down at the same time that they thought, ooh, they were too late to release a volume of water ahead of the big deluge. And that created a worse flooding. So look, there's engineers or there's management issues with dams as well. But
yeah,
that's why we have technology and people that can manage these things better.
Look, Don, sometimes it's failure. Basic common sense, a layperson's question, if we are saying that the world is getting warmer, and we do have evidence, a bit of it, there's a bit of temperature increase, and we know that warmer air holds more moisture, shouldn't we be building more dams?
Well, and using them for electricity and having the dam water themselves used for recreation and
but
all sorts of stuff.
Meanwhile, we are doing the opposite. We are dismantling dams at a time when we need more dams.
Well, of course, we're putting up wind turbines and solar panels to make the electricity some other way. Surely that's a quid pro quo. That's an offset. That's okay, isn't it, Jaspreet?
I mean, the US has undertaken the largest dam removal program in history right now. We spoke about the Klamath River, getting the salmon back. I don't know. I like salmon. I especially like them on my menu. But do I like people more? I do.
Yeah, well,
that's just me.
Look, when you go to Holland and you see, this isn't about rivers, this is about sea level ingress into the area of Holland or the Netherlands, you realize what engineers can do and why we're now undoing what engineers have done before makes no sense to me. So this is environmentalism gone mad, in my opinion. I'll just put it out there. To me, it's environmentalism under the climate and also nature in terms of restocking the fish. Just gone one step too far.
Screw the people. Let's get the biodiversity credits in place. That's what we are up against.
Little surprise that
as Don and I speak today, it is 11th of November. The COP29, the United Nations Climate Change Conference, is underway. And the UN chief has just warned, essential to act now to prevent chaotic climate breakdown in Baku. And he says the dangers are underestimated as irreversible tipping points near. And we are still underestimating the risk, he says, of ecosystem collapse. And of course, the ecosystem and biodiversity, words that are now in the UN's lexicon for Baku, are because they have just wrapped up the COP16, which is the biodiversity COP in Cali, Colombia. So it is COP season. The UN is milking it. The compromised academics, NGOs, politicians are milking it. And what they're milking is actually us, our lifetime savings, our futures, our children's futures. But at the same time, I'll pop this up for the last climate crazy. They are telling us, they're openly telling us that the Earth's climate will continue changing long after humanity hits net zero emissions. This is from the University of Melbourne, and our research shows why. So let's not go into the reasons, but they're openly telling us that depending on which climate simulation they look at, the Earth could be warming for another half a millennia or even up to 700 years, Don.
Oh, yes. And I watched your council meeting the other day, Jaspreet, when you mentioned something along that line that there'll be a lag effect, apparently, that the effects of everything we're doing today might not be felt for that time, 400 to 600 years, I think you said. But I'll just go back to Guterres. He's quoted... he said, until now, there's been some ambiguity, sometimes in the texts. And the problem with ambiguity is that those who misbehave will have a justification to do so. This is the text they write at the end of every conference. We did it at the end of free trade agreements and stuff, yeah, or that sort of stuff. He says, questioned on whether Saudi Arabia, the UAE and China should contribute to climate finance, Guterres said, countries were in different positions. You cannot compare Saudi Arabia with China. The GDP per capita in Saudi Arabia is much higher, and Saudi Arabia has basically built its wealth on oil and gas, he said. But here's the kicker. I don't think we need to go on with the exploitation of new sources, because I'm totally convinced that we will not be able to use the reserve that exists in the world until the end of history, he said.
Oh.
What does that say to you? Don't fear.
If I said what actually said, it would be unpublishable, Don. Yeah.
I mean, talk, the double speak from this guy is incredible. And so, look, he talks about, further back, he talks about the fossil fuel company should be banned from advertising, calling them the godfathers of climate chaos. Well, I'd suggest his ilk are the godfathers of climate communism, and I'm over it.
100%. Mm. And I'm truly over the climate crazy today. So damn the dams it is, and perhaps it's time for us to move on down now to bring on our next guest.
Yeah, and so we've got Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center, and he's been a staunch advocate for local over global. And he's talking about the Trump re-election after a four-year gap and what that may bring for the American people. But his big warning is don't be complacent. This just because Donald Trump's in power and there's a new regime. Don't let your guard down. So we've got Tom DeWeese, president of the American Policy Center, up next.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. 2057, as always, is a number to text any feedback. Back in a moment.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.